This Secret Identity Creator Spotlight special features an interview with Silver Surfer and Amazing Spider-Man scribe Dan Slott, who I spoke with at Terrificon 2016.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
God, clean the whole thing up.
Hey everybody, this is Brian, and as you have probably figured out by now, this is your non-standard episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. Matt and I did not get a chance to record this week, but we are going to have a Creator Spotlight special. Back at Terrificon 2016 in August, I had the good fortune to sit down with Amazing Spider-Man and Silver Surfer writer Dan Slott, and we got to talk for about 20-25 minutes or so about both of those titles, as well as the panel that we were about to do at Terrificon. And as you know, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, so this was an interview that I was very excited to do. And we touched on a lot of the goings-on in the Amazing Spider-Man universe and some characters in particular that I am very interested to see what happens with during the clone conspiracy, the Dead No More storyline that is happening right now in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to the interview. Dan Slott is your Creator Spotlight special this week. Next week, we will be returning to your regularly scheduled programming, and we will talk to you then. Alrighty, this is Brian here on the final day of Terrificon 2016, and I am sitting next to Dan Slott. How are you today, sir?
Hey! I'm awake. I'm caffeinated.
And you just spent some time with the Spider-Mobile.
I was in the Spider-Mobile!
Which was pretty awesome. I mean, we were talking about that before, but there was a legit Spider-Mobile that someone made and brought to this show for the very first time, and it's like my dream car.
Seriously, if I had, like, all the money in the world and I could own, like, let's say three cars, Spider-Mobile, Mach 5, maybe a Batmobile. Maybe. Adam West version.
Or maybe the new version of the Spider-Mobile that is featured in your Amazing Spider-Man run now.
But that's for real. I'm talking imaginary cars.
Man. Oh, I'm sorry. Imaginary cars. But that is a good segue because obviously for anybody that listens to our show, they know of you as the man behind Amazing Spider-Man and Silver Surfer, which congratulations on the critical acclaim for that book, by the way.
Oh, dude, me and all the All Reds, we are having so much fun on that. It's a joy to work on. And it's a joy to work with them. They're the happiest people in comics.
It's so great to hear you say that because we had a chance to meet them a few years ago at Boston Comic Con when it was just this tiny little show in a hotel. And that's what Mike struck me as. It was before even iZombie came out. And he was just the nicest guy. And to see them with you, that to me seems like a match made in heaven in terms of enthusiasm for the character.
I get excited when I just see there's an email from Mike. I'm like, ah! Mike Allred sent me an email. It doesn't even have to have an attachment. It's just his enthusiasm for working on comics and comics in general is just, it's infectious. And he's always so pumped about whatever we're doing. And it comes through in the art. And it comes through, hopefully it comes through in the story. One of the happiest things was when when we just started up and he asked if for credits we could be called storytellers together. And I'm like, I'm already a storyteller. Yes. I want to say two. Yeah. I'm on a panel with Peter David and Roger Stern and James DeMattis and the big old Spider-Man writing love.
Yep, I am moderating that panel today. And I can't wait for that panel because there is so much to cover, and we only have 45 minutes.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be fun. It's neat because, like, when you're on Spidey and you meet other Spider-Man writers, it's like you're part of this big fraternity. Yep. One of the neat things about being, like, the current guy is people give you wonderful advice, like what they would do, what they did, and almost every Spider-Man writer to a man that I've met, whether it's DeFalco or Jerry Conway, James DeMattis, Len, Mar, anybody, everyone always gives the same piece of advice, which is stay on the ride as long as you can. Yep. Don't let them take you off. The second you're off. And it's like, okay. Yep. I will cling to this with my death grip. Thank you for the advice.
But I think that is a great segue into talking about your run on Amazing Spider-Man, because, and you just mentioned when you talked about the Allreds and your work on Silver Surfer, about sort of the fun that you have with it and the sense of optimism. And I've always felt that your run on Spidey, and pretty much all the books that you've been on, but definitely your run on Spidey, is as much as you put Peter and his supporting cast through the ringer, there is a never-ending sense of optimism and true love for the characters, the supporting cast in that world, that I think shines through in every story. So I get the feeling when I read your stuff that you love writing Spider-Man as much right now as the first time that you started writing him.
Yes. I love the character. He's my favorite character in all of fiction. And we're talking, screw Sherlock Holmes and Hamlet and Beowulf, Hercules.
Right.
No, hell with all of them. No, it's Spider-Man. Spider-Man's my guy. He's always been my guy. The hardest, my career on Spidey has been a monkey's paw. Like, it's been wonderful. Like, you get your wish. You get to write Spider-Man. But you never get to do it the way you want. And that's so Peter Parker-ish.
Yep.
Which, it's perfect. Like, in my dream world, I'd be doing the book once a month. Just once a month. Mm-hmm. And I'd get to, sit back and kick my feet up and, dot every I and cross every T. So much of the book is, you're working on a giant team of guys and you're putting out three times a month. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing it yourself, but you got to put it out two times a month. And you always have to be planning three stories ahead. You're always feeding three or four artists at the same time. And because I'm an idiot and I work Marvel style, that means I plot it. And then I get, when the art comes in, I script it. So I'm kind of writing every story twice, mm-hmm. which is, it's so weird. I'm always working in like three different time frames while working on this one book, so that it comes out, like clockwork, like boom, 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 boom. And that means there's always a very talented editor, whether it's Steve Wacker or Nick Lowe now, who's keeping every train on the track and cracking the whip as hard as they need to keep everything going. It's great, it's fun, but at no point am I not saying this isn't a job. It's many late nights, it's lots of email chains, there's a lot of extra stuff that you don't see.
Right.
And I love it, and I can't think of any other job I'd rather do. But as I get older and older, there are some days where I go, man, I would really like to sleep. It would be really nice to sleep in and go, ah. But then you can't, it's weird. When Brand New Day was wrapping up, I was looking at all the other work. It's really hard to judge your own work.
Right.
But I was looking at what everyone else was doing on the book at the time, and I thought Joe Kelly, every time Joe Kelly stepped up to bat, I thought he just knocked it out of the park. Every Joe Kelly story was blowing me away. And as we were wrapping up, in my mind, I was thinking if I was the editor and I knew we were going down to two a month, I would give the book to Joe Kelly. Mm-hmm. But I also knew we had a second Spidey book coming up, which was Avenging Spidey back then. So I took a lunch with Steve Wacker, and the lunch was the pitch. I was pitching for Avenging Spider-Man.
Yep.
I never wanted to stop writing Spider-Man, but I just thought, hey, this is Joe. It felt like the Joe move was the right move. And so I was pitching for the lifeboat. I was going like, I want to be over here still doing Spidey, but doing this. So I made the pitch for that. And I was crestfallen because Steve immediately went, no, I don't want you doing Avenging Spider-Man. And I was thinking, damn, that's over. The ride has come to a stop. I had my time. I got to do it. Great. And he's like, no, I want you on the lead book. And I was like, what? It was like record scratch. He was like, ah. And no, I want you to do this. We're going to put Zeb on Avenging, and this is my plan. This is what I want to do. But here's the deal. If you do this, you have to stop doing Mighty Avengers. Because I was doing the sister book. Brian was doing the two main Avengers book, and I was doing the sister book, Mighty. And I was like, ooh. So he's like, no, you just Spider-Man all the time. Spider-Man 24/7. That's what I want you doing. That's the deal. So I was like, you know, I have to think about this. And it was winter, and we put on our coats, and we headed out. And I think Brevoort was there, too. So Steve and Brevoort were, like, walking back up to Marvel, and I was heading home. And I was, like, a block away, and I pull out my phone. I call my dad, and I tell him what happened. I was like, what should I do? And before I even finished sentence, he's like, you're doing Spider-Man. That's all you ever wanted to do. And I quickly called him. And I called him before they reached Marvel.
Yep.
Well, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Forget everything I said. I'm doing Spider-Man, you know.
I love that story, and it's so funny that you mentioned Joe Kelly, because we're huge fans of his work as well, and his story with the Rhino, 617 and 625, I believe, is easily a top five all-time Spider-Man story for me.
Yeah, oh, that, the with Oksana, and it just rips out your guts,
yep.
and it's a great companion to the earlier Rhino story he did. It's just, you just really, you know, when I look at Brand New Day, that whole run, it's really hard for me to judge my own work, because I'm in the thick of it, but I look at everything that was done, and I go, man, those Rhino stories, the Mark Guggenheim done in one Flash Thompson story, oh, that's brutal. There's some the Lizard story by Zeb Wells,
brutal.
Yeah, there's all these gems in there, and then one after that, the Mark Waid stories with the Shocker.
Yep,
there's stuff in there that is prime Spider-Man stuff, and it's an honor to be in the middle of all that.
And when you took Otto Octavius, and you, to me, like, I think of, when I think of Spidey, one of the things I always think of is, like, the great villain stories, and what are the greatest villain stories that I've enjoyed. And what I loved about Superior Spider-Man is you basically took Doc Ock and positioned him as almost surpassing the Green Goblin in terms of, like, villains is in his pantheon, and he had to live in Peter Parker's shoes. And so now, as we see that coming around in your Amazing Spider-Man run, like, whatever you're going to do with Otto coming up, you have so earned it through everything that you've put Peter and Otto through. And, like, to me, like, he vaulted into and it was such a great turn of events that to me, like, I can't wait to see what happens with Otto.
One of the interesting things was when we first started Brand New Day, one of our mandates, one of the things that were told to us by editorial was, let's not use the core villains.
Yep.
Let's put them in a box, let them marinate, because too many people, for too many stories in a row in other books, were jobbing them.
Yep.
They were just using Spidey villains as punching bags.
Uh-huh.
And it was diluting them when they showed up in Spidey. So the idea was that no one gets to use Spider-Man villains. And that included us in the core book. And that was weird. That was weird and frustrating that, like, you finally get to write Spider-Man, but you can't use Mysterio. You can't use the Lizard. You can't use Electro. You can't use... It was one thing after another. You're like, oh. I mean, we had to make up our own guys.
Yep.
And then when we got to... When it was... Even when we got to... unlock the box, and it was great. Everyone, who wants to play with who? And I was like, Mysterio, I want Mysterio. And then Wade was like, I want Electro. Everyone was like grabbing stuff.
Yep.
And I locked up Doc Ock for what was then 600. Mm-hmm. But one of the pieces we still weren't allowed to play with was Norman. Mm-hmm. Because Warren Ellis took him for Thunderbolts. And then after he was done with Thunderbolts, Brian locked him up in Avengers. We could not touch... We were working on Spider-Man, and we couldn't use Norman Osborn or the Green Goblin. It was weird.
Yep.
And there was a point, you know, when I was on Solo, where we still couldn't use Norman. And Brian was like, okay, I think I'm done with him. I think I'm done with him. You can have Norman back. And then at one point, wait, I'm not done with him. And then there was like one more arc of Norman. We were just like waiting. It was like a buzzard on a limb. But that's one of the reasons why Otto got so pumped up.
Uh-huh.
Was Norman was off the table. And it was like, give me my Green Goblin, damn it.
Yep.
But pumped up he has been, because no one understands Peter Parker more right now in terms of villains than Otto Octavius does.
He has literally been inside his head.
Yep.
He's rented his head. And what's fun is, ever since the events of One More Day, One Moment in Time, mm-hmm. Where Doctor Strange did the mind wipe, Norman doesn't know anymore.
Right.
Barely, you know, we've got it down to, it's, if I could make it less, I would, but I can't. It's like 27 characters in the Marvel Universe on Earth in our dimension mm-hmm. know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and you really want to keep that number low.
Yep.
And that's something I'm a jerk about. Like, that's something where I reach out to other books when you're not telling that story.
Yep.
No, that guy's not finding out.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, that makes your story a lot better. Yeah, sure, that they know Peter Parker. I don't care.
Right.
it used to be that everybody's identity was a secret.
Right.
And it was really special when one character let another
right.
character in. And that was like a really special thing. But nowadays there's like a whole new generation of writers that find secret identity silly.
Mm-hmm.
And the better technology gets, the more cameras are everywhere,
yep.
the more fingerprint and voice analysis and everything, see any kind of CSI tool, blood work, whatever, the whole concept of secret identities gets sillier and sillier.
Yep.
But I think you need them for comics to work, superhero comics, because so much of superhero comics, so much of it is the dual identity, the escape, that you get to be, you know, this in your private life and have the soap opera element that Stan and all these guys brought to Marvel that made it so much different from the DC characters. You get to have your very human and relatable character who then gets to have this extra life.
Yep.
Peter Parker needs that more than most.
I was just going to say that, yep, absolutely.
Like a Steve Rogers, not so much.
Right.
Tony Stark, the way they're playing him now, not so much.
Right.
But Peter, that seems to be a really big thing.
Yep.
Like, if he's hanging out with Harry, if he's hanging out with Betty or anybody or Jonah, they can't know he's Spider-Man.
Right.
It ruins so much of that relationship. It suddenly he's not, you know, if Peter Parker is Spider-Man, everybody knows.
Right.
You know, that's an interesting thing to pursue for the Civil War arc. But, you know, one, why isn't everyone, like, firebombing Aunt May's house every other week?
Right.
And two, how do you have a normal relationship with someone? Then it starts almost becoming like about the nature of fame.
Right.
You know, like, oh, my friend Justin Bieber.
Right.
You know, who wants to read that?
Yeah, and that's the thing with Peter Parker and with Spider-Man in general, is that his history has so many different chapters in it that you can always go back and revisit different moments in time. There's always going to be a new moment coming around the corner, and seeing what you've seeded for happening in Amazing Spider-Man, I cannot wait to see the next chapter. Now, the one character that I mentioned to you yesterday before we wrap up, because I know the show is starting, that I am very attached to now.
What's that over there?
Is Anna Maria Marconi. She was such a great character, and especially during the run of Superior Spider-Man, and even now, knowing what could be coming for Otto, like, I'm a little fearful for her, and so I just wanted to put in my vote now for Anna Maria sticking around for a long time.
I am saying nothing.
All right.
I'm not pulling back the curtain. I'm not showing you anything. Read the book. Someone asked me once, how would you describe Peter and Gwen's relationship? I said, abridged.
Well, if for no other reason than to see the next chapter in Otto and Anna Maria's relationship, that's the crazy thing about what was awesome about Superior Spider-Man is you come to love Otto Octavius, you come to root for him. So there's a part of us that knows that eventually he's probably going to become a villain again, but we still love him.
I don't think he ever sees himself as a villain.
No, he doesn't.
No, even if he's blowing up the world, he's doing it for the noblest of reasons. And also to promote his giant intellect and ego.
Yeah, absolutely.
But because he's the best,
mm-hmm.
and we need him.
Yep.
I think we're in a place now where when Anna Maria Marconi, when she first met the person she was calling Peter Parker,
yep.
the person she met had Otto's mind. And she fell in love with Otto's mind. For her, she could care less that Peter Parker was a handsome guy.
Right.
She kept nicknaming him Slick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, you slick-looking guy. I know. But what she really appreciated was the way his mind worked and the way he thought and the things he did. But that said, he was keeping huge secrets from her.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was that he was this metal-armed guy that tried to blow up the world a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And now she knows that. I don't think there's an out there. I don't think there's a... You know, if you're Otto, you know, you want Anna Maria to love you. But if you're Anna Maria, you've got to be the world's biggest idiot. That's Doc Ock. You know it's Doc Ock. That mind is... Every secret is revealed to you now. How in the world could a relationship like that, even if he somehow magically got a body back, work?
And that's the most exciting part of the story, is that in his mind, he's going to think that it can still work. And so when he comes back, or at least in my mind, like Otto in his mind thinks that there's a way he could still fix this. And so when he comes back to Anna Maria Marconi, if that is what happens, that's the part I can't wait to see, is when she says to him, it's not going to be the way that you think it's going to be.
You are really going to want to read Amazing Spider-Man 18 and Amazing Spider-Man 20. You're going to want to read them so bad.
What better endorsement for the upcoming issues of Amazing Spider-Man? And I could see that your line is going to be starting to form. The doors have opened here. I'm going to get to spend a little more time with you on a panel, but I really appreciate your time at the show. And I will say again, I have loved everything that you've done on Amazing Spider-Man. I cannot wait to see what's next. And I hope the ride goes on forever with you, because it really has been an absolute blast.
It will, if I can figure out how to like hook up a Ouija board to my grave.
Well, I mean, now we have the Jackal, so who knows what's possible.
Mwah! Oh, good ploy. Hey, way to plug the upcoming arc. Dead No More.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.